It is time once again for WonderPod, episode 107. That's right, people, I'm back. I'm sure there's a handful of you that aren't happy about that development, but we'll soldier on nonetheless. That is, if Skype sticks together with us, it seems to be giving us issues. I think it gave the crew issues on episode 106 as well. So we're going to do the best we can and see what happens. Joining me this week, as always, is John.
Hey, everybody. Just want to give the guys who did so well on 106 some props. It was a good show. I listened to it this week. Yeah, you guys did well.
I would also like to extend my congratulations. I listened to parts of it. It's not the guy's fault. I have a hard time anymore finding time and focus to listen to an entire podcast, period. I think doing 2 years of the show has damaged me beyond all repair to listen to anything, unless it's pure comedy. Unless it's like a comedy podcast, then I'm okay. But it's so hard anymore to listen to podcasts. But I listened to most of it. You guys did awesome last week. And speaking of that, Glacinator is in the middle of finals hell. So joining us this week, 2 weeks in a row, is Gunsage.
Woot woot and a boot.
Have you been playing anything, John, or should I kick the Gunsage first?
Well, to tell you the truth, I was playing the usual favorites on 3DS. And my, should I just get into it or what?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead. If you got something, I was just going to save you.
Sure. I won't say too much, but my 3DS battery, died fairly quickly on my travels to Cuba, and when I got down there, I was hoping that there was going to be an outlet that was the right power, the right voltage and stuff for my needs. But of course, the outlet itself was some weird funky thing, and it was 220 volts. So I really didn't. I had taken some adapters, but they weren't power converters or voltage converters. So I really didn't want to fry my machine. So I was 3DS-less for the rest of the trip and the way home. But one thing I did play when I got home, and I was really jonesing to get back into, was Mass Effect 3. And yeah, I've sunk a few hours into that, and surprisingly, I for a game that's so much built around action, I didn't fight a whole lot of dudes because I spent a lot of time in the Citadel. I spent about 2 hours, I'd say, last night, and just running around the Citadel doing odd jobs and trying to find panels to find the background checks of this guy and that guy. And I can feel the Mass Effect bug creeping up on me, where I have to finish every mission that comes across my my journal, my list of available missions. And yeah, I'm going to be playing this game for a while, I think. And that comes from the point of view where, when I finished Mass Effect 2, I just said to myself, I wish there was more. And so that's what I'm getting with Mass Effect 3, which is a great thing. I do wish there was some more variety, but and what's going on. Other than, I'm not sure how many times I'm going to want to listen to Shepard give a mini speech to somebody about motivating them in the times of war and the Reapers, this and that, and it seems like everyone he comes across, he gives them some shot of motivation, and it was good for a while, but I'm kind of looking for something a little bit different, I guess. But I can tell, like, the missions themselves, the ones I have done that are fighting based, I rescued these biotic kids from their school, which is being ransacked by Cerberus, and it was a pretty cool mission. They kind of help you in the fight, and in the final battle of it is this kind of a bottleneck spot where you have to take cover from a guy in a mech suit and all these guys trying to flank you, and these Cerberus centurions with like energy shields, plus ground attackers with like metal shields. And it was a pretty cool little fight. I died a lot, but the more I played it, the more I got back into the groove of Mass Effect and how to the strategy that you have to use to, in terms of the combat. So, yeah, I'm back in. I'm back in deep. So, I'll have more to talk about in terms of the plot and next week and how I feel about it. And we'll see how it goes when I get to the inevitable ending, the infamous ending, I should say. And yeah, that's about it. I really haven't played much else.
So it was all 220 down there. That's weird. It was
yeah,
all
220.
I've dealt with all sorts of kind of power converters for European friends in hotel rooms, like here in California when they come to visit and stuff, you know, and you're like, how in the hell was this ever intended to work? Like, it has the right one for, you know, for regulated current we use here in the U.S., but it's it can be a handful. I've never seen something that's all 220.
It was all 220. My sister-in-law and her husband had the room came with some sort of a converter, but we couldn't figure out how the hell it worked. It seemed like it was a backward. If you wanted to go from, you know, your Cuban gizmos to North American, more so than the other way around. But yeah, I didn't get to plug anything in except for my iPod, which surprisingly was a clock radio that was designed with a built-in converter, so that the radio was 120 or 110, and so you could plug in your iPod and such, but you couldn't use the plug itself for anything else.
Oh, so the 3DS didn't have the right converter or the right female plug to go into the clock radio.
Yeah, well, the clock radio only had the iPod dock and a headphone jack for an MP3 player.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But But yeah, the outlets are like these two, like they're two prongs, but they're round prongs rather than the flat, you know, that you normally see in your plug. And there was no ground wire at all. It was just straight in.
You guys use Canada uses 110 regulated like the U.S. does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
that's what I thought. It's been a while since I've actually been in Canada, so I couldn't remember exactly. Other thing too is, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say some bigger equipment and, you know, appliances and whatnot might need a higher voltage, but 110 normally.
Oh, we got that down here too. You do use some 220, and that's been electricity pod. Anyway, no. And my own dumb fault for starting it. The other thing too is we should do a weekly podcast. What price will Bruce finally buy Mass Effect? Because it was $29.99 on the gold box deal at Amazon.
Oh no, and you didn't get it?
Nope, passed on it. I got too much fucking shit. You realize how many games I'm playing at the same time, so I don't feel guilty. I'm playing like 7 games at the same freaking time.
Bruce, do you know who you're co-hosting this podcast with?
I know, and that's why I know it's
I'm
between
the
you
pile
and
of shame.
Between you, yeah, that's the thing, though. Between you and I've just started feeling worse and worse about it. So now instead of, like, putting some to a side, I just juggle, like, wait till you hear what I got. But, and I've only been home since, like, last Friday night. And I just went right back into juggling games again. It's not horrible, but I just went, there's no way. Because when I do finally play it, I want to play it in its pure form. I want to play it the way I played Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2. And I want to have the time to do what you're talking about, to get in immersed in it. You know what I'm saying? So that when I get to the ending, you know, then I'll truly know whether I feel like I got ripped off or I feel like I did after 2. You know, it's kind of like a long, very long, very drawn out choose-your-own-adventure book. depending on whether you used walkthroughs or not, which I finally did. I have like 4 save files. I think I'm going to delete all, but God, hopefully I can remember which one was the one I wanted to use. But I have like 4 save files for the ending of Mass Effect 2.
I have one. I've had one since Mass Effect, the first Mass Effect, that I'm carrying through, and whatever happens, happens.
Well, I do have that one. I mean, they're basically all based off of the original Mass Effect 1 save that I've got.
Mm-hmm.
But I took different routes, and I played with different things. And then I used the quote-unquote lazy casual gamer route of doing a walkthrough once. I got them out both alive twice, once with the walkthrough and once without. Don't even ask me how I did it without a walkthrough. Fuck, I hated the end of the game. That game, end of that game was a pain in the ass at times. But I am going to buy it. $29.99. If I had a couple less games, and one I'll talk about in my... Well, I wrote a post on that now I'm thinking I'm probably going to end up getting, even though it's Capcom. I might a bit. But I'm finding that 2012 is the year of the non-AAA title. I'm starting to look at a lot of shooters and go, yeah, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I've got too many downloadable games and shit I want to play. Speaking of that, Gunsage, what have you been playing this week?
Well, I'll try to keep it brief.
Go ahead. Did you just hear me talk about juggling seven at the same time? I mean, I'm not going to blame you if you're on long.
Oh, I know. But I went a little long last week, too, so... Yeah. Okay. Still playing The Witcher off and on, but I got kind of stuck. It did one of those asshole things where it did an autosave right before this big fight that I just cannot seem to win. And I need to go back and load up an older save file and see if I can level up a little bit more before doing it, but I don't know how much that's going to help.
Is this the original Witcher?
Yeah. I've also got the second one, but I've got both the enhanced editions for the on Steam now.
I don't know how far you are in the original, but what finally made me quit playing it entirely, I've still got it, is it does that autosave right before a huge boss fight when you're not really prepared for it a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I finally got sick of it and just went, you know, this is I've wasted enough time on this game. Good game, just not for me. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, no, there's no big... It's a pretty early boss battle. It's like... you fight a lot of Bargus.
Oh, okay.
And the actual beast, and I'm like, really? Because the witch keeps dying within, like, 5 seconds. And I'm like, oh, man. Because she's really the only thing keeping me alive there, and it's like, I keep getting stunned by the fire, and I'm like, what do I do? So, I don't know.
Yeah, I remember that fight. Your best option is to do what you're talking about. Go back to an earlier save and level up a bunch more, because I had to do the same freaking thing.
Oh, yeah. But, let's see. I also, well, since I still don't have the 360, I re-downloaded, they had a discount on it, which wasn't, you know, much of a discount, but Breath of Death 7 and also Cthulhu Saves the World by Z Boyd. He's getting ready to make another one. I think he's pairing up with the Penny Arcade guys to do a Final Fantasy VI style Penny Arcade game, which is going to be kind of fun. Let's see, I played Xenoblade Chronicles a little bit more. Really haven't made too much progress. Mostly I've just been going around doing the side quests, because when you do the side quests in the game, you raise your character's affinity for each other, but also you raise the affinity for the surrounding areas by going around doing random tasks for people. You help them become better acquainted with each other and so on. It's kind of an interesting system. It almost reminds me of like the earlier Star Ocean games. But let's see. I also started taking advantage of... they had one of those midweek madness sales or whatever called the From Holland with Love Pack. And it was like 10 different games. And I think it was only like $5 or something like that for the whole pack. So I went ahead and I downloaded it, but I purchased it, but I didn't really install anything for a while. And then I installed and beat Diamond Dan, which is a fun little action platformer puzzle game. Tokitori's okay. It's another puzzle game. It's real generic. And then Rush is kind of fun. Actually, Rush is pretty addictive. You have like a three-dimensional puzzle. You have to redirect blocks. It requires a lot of timing and just different visual spatial puzzle elements. Let's see... kind of touched on Just Cause 2 a little bit more. Jolly Rover, another independent adventure game. It's kind of crappy, but it was like $3 or something like that. Let's see. I fired up the emulator, played some more Final Fantasy Advance, Tactics Advance 2. I'm planning on reviewing that one next. That one is actually really... really damn good. I would actually say it's better than the original. Which is saying a lot, because the original Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, I played the shit out of that on the Game Boy Advance. Let's see. I finally ended up beating Hector Badge of Carnage, which is one of those Telltale things where it's like a three-episode adventure really raunchy, lewd stuff, but just hilarious. It's like a combination of Police Quest and Leisure Suit Larry almost. And then they had a midweek madness going on for Dead Space, so I picked up 1 and 2 to kind of recap with the original because I'd already beaten it, but also with Dead Space 2, I'd never played it. And that game's fucking twisted. I mean, the original was it would mess with your head every so often, but it wasn't real cerebral. It was mostly, you know, jump scares and the whole space aspect and everything like that. Nothing major. But the second one really plays around with almost like a lot of space madness and just different crazy stuff going on. Plus, in this one, you're actually in an area where people live, not just, a mining ship or whatever. So it's they really did a lot with it. And especially, I don't know if they still have it on sale, but it was only like $5 when I picked it up. And then I recently reviewed the Noito Love 2 Devolution, which is basically evolution spelled backwards. And it's just an insanely crazy, over-the-top action platformer, very similar to the old Treasure games. It was $4 on Steam, and I had one hell of a fun time with it. I definitely highly recommend that one, but really, that's all I've been playing.
There was one I was going to ask you about, and now I can't remember. Shit. Maybe it'll
click. Was it any of those?
Oh, that's what I was going to tell you. I'm surprised you haven't gotten into good old games. They got all the Police Quests. They're like $1.99.
I've already beaten all the Police Quests. I've pretty much beaten all the older adventure stuff. So I try to check out, especially the whole Hector Badge of Carnage, and even the stuff that I'm not too sure about, but I'm like, well, it's only $5, like Jolly Rover and stuff. I'm real huge into adventure games. There's very, very few I haven't played that are older ones.
By the way, you're absolutely correct. Z-Boyd, they're in production. Z-Boyd is doing the Penny Arcade Episode 3. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be based off of the storyline for the Precipice of Darkness 1 and 2, which, speaking of Pile of Shame, John, I picked up for $1.99 during the Christmas sale of Christmas sale on Steam, and I've only gotten like halfway through episode 1. But it's gonna be based off that, but it's gonna be more Chalutha Saves the World, Final Fantasy 6 style graphics. I given that Jerry and Mike of Penny Arcade are both older gamers, I'm looking very much forward to see how that works. But yeah, no Legends of Grimrock for you, Gunsage?
Oh, I've got it. I just haven't. I've only gotten to level 4 and I'm stuck already.
Yeah, I'm saving that one for the winter. I think I want to play it, but I'm saving it for the winter again, like Mass Effect, when I can really sink my teeth into it. I don't want to just give it a high pass and be done with it. I think I've talked to enough people that have played it that are old school gamers that really loved it. So it's on the list. It's on a notepad file. It's the script for the future Pile of Shame, and I'll pick it up at some point. So as for me, let's do the quickies. Aeon, still playing that, still like it. I'm still sticking to about a 2-hour limit, but that's only because I'm juggling more games like Chainsaws. I'm about to level 20 now. It's interesting, but let's put it this way. If I decide to get Guild Wars 2 and go whole hog into an MMO this summer, I'm probably going to quit playing Aeon. It's fun, but it's keeping my attention, but it's nothing that I won't put down for something better. And I played some more Sniper V1. Like Gunsage was talking about, I picked it up for $5. It's dated. It definitely looks dated. It can be very difficult and cheap at times. Still makes me want to pick up Sniper V2, which I played the demo for a couple weeks ago. I started playing Tribes Ascend, which is that free-to-play shooter. I suck at it. I'm just going to come right out and tell you I suck at it, because it's even twitchier than the older Halos, and I was decent at Twitch games when I was younger, but just really not that good at them now. But the thing is the quality of it and the amount of fun I had with it, even though I was getting my ass kicked, makes me think that the first-person shooter developers had started to get better start to get a little nervous, like single-player RPG developers have in the past, because if whoever's making Tribes of Sand, and I'm sorry, I can't remember, it is making some money off of this, Hi-Rez Studios would be that company. If they're making some money off of this with this kind of quality, looks kind of like Halo 2, Halo 3-ish, only in the Tribes universe. For those of you that weren't around when Tribes was originally out, those would be games that had jetpacks before Halo Reach. So like in the late 90s, I played Tribes 1, I think. I don't think I ever bothered with 2. It just wasn't my thing. Then I picked up... Yeah, but after Duke 3D, exactly. Then I picked up the Dragon's Dogma demo. Now, this is from Capcom, and I'm always a little leery when it's Capcom or Konami, given, and Gunsage can verify this, given our experiences with demos from Capcom, like the Lost Planet 2 demo, multiplayer demo, it just really... I wasn't real sure, but a couple people I follow on Twitter, Max Scoville being one of Destructoid and Destructoid TV, and crap, I can't remember who the other was off the top of my head. I decided to play it, and you know what? It's got some issues. It's not the greatest looking game in the world, but I liked it a lot. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. It comes out May 22nd. I'm close to thinking it might be something I pick up on launch, but I kind of want to see some final reviews on it, which is really rare for me. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with Dragon's Dogma. Let's see what else. I've been playing more Minecraft. I kind of gone back into Minecraft. I'm calling it Minecraft City. Basically, what I'm doing is I'm taking an NPC village and playing it like SimCity, seeing how big I can build it, how well I can maintain it, so on and so forth. I'm just doing that when I've got only a few minutes to kill, really don't feel like booting up into anything else. And finally, the game I picked up yesterday, Trials Evolution. Now, for those of you that are longtime listeners of the podcast, you know I played the original Trials. And you also know that I rode dirt bikes for many, 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 many years. And one of my biggest problems with Trials HD, the original from Red Lynx, was the fact that the motorcycle was like a goddamn pogo stick. The suspension, even for Trials riding, which is different than motocross or freestyle motocross, was a little out of control. Also, they relied just far too often on gimmicks. And the design was slightly bad. Well, let me tell you what. Red Lynx apparently sees that as being the way to go about doing their games, because it's not much better in the second one. Now, the pogo stick suspension is slightly better. The gimmicks seem to be a little less. Level design still... It's like, well, they've gotten this far really, really well. Let's throw in some shit that you got a bunny hop that's just almost impossible if you're not going to defy the laws of physics. That said, though, just like last time, I loved the game. I'm getting smart-ass chat here saying Excitebike. Yeah, no. Excitebike ain't got jack freaking shit on Trials. More realistic, for one. Two, it's one of those games you can pick up for 10 minutes, and if you start to get frustrated, you just put it down, go back, pick it up. Pick it up, put it down, pick it up, put it down. And you're still having fun with it. As much as I started out this little segment kind of, you know, giving Red Lynx a bad time again like I did with Trials HD, let me tell you what, though. They've added multiplayer to it. You can do everything from motocross racing to Trials to other different things. They added some kind of games to it in the single player and in the multiplayer. Everything from... you have two boards strapped to you, and you have to see how far you can flap after crashing. You know, it's everything you could possibly imagine they've crammed into it, and it makes it fun. while yes, I still have issues with how the bikes handle, I'm willing to admit, like I did with Trials HD, that that's probably more me being too used to a real motorcycle. And I have ridden actual Trials bikes. It also has a track builder, a ton of customization. It was worth 1,200 points. I'm about halfway through the single player at the moment. The other neat thing is just kind of like with Burnout Crash, all your friends list times are there. You know, the people on your friends list who've been playing it, and they appear as a little dot with their name as kind of a ghost as you ride along. So the competitive side of me gets into it because I see that that person's, you know, ahead of me. So I start riding faster or riding better or do the track over and over again. And for the most part, I've only got like four friends playing it, or I pretty much sit atop the leaderboards in most of it at this point. I'm sure some of them will be giving me shit like they did last time because I go back to the easier levels with a bigger engine bike. And they call that cheating, and what they don't understand is I just like having more motor to be able to use in panic situations. It's not necessarily the best thing to do easier or beginner courses with a big bike with a lot of power. But it's nice to have if you're in a situation where just hammering on the throttle will save you. And I, believe it or not, that's the one thing that playing these games I can carry over from real life. Because there's a lot of times where you just hammer on it and you're probably going to make it. Maybe. But you still crash a lot. Overall, I like Trials Evolution. I just wish as well as Red Lynx did with the rest of the game, it being more outdoors, not just all in warehouses this time. I just wish they'd really worked a little bit more on making the bikes realistic. That's really the only thing holding me back from telling you to buy this over and over again. As it sits now, try the trial. Or if you like Trials HD and didn't have the issues with some of the stuff that I did in Trials HD, yeah, you're not going to get burned on your 1,200 points. Trust me. And that's all I've been playing.
Yeah, I liked Proud HD a lot. I played it a lot until I kind of hit a wall, and where I wasn't getting past. I can't even remember which level it was now, but I just couldn't get over that hump, and I ended up, you know, moving on to something else. But for the time I was playing it, yeah, great game. I'm you know, whenever Evolution goes on sale, I'll definitely pick it up.
I had that same problem. I got into the high A levels, like they give you licenses now, like D, C, B, and A. And believe it or not, that's kind of how it works in real trials riding. We have some trials contests, and they're not races per se, but contests here in Northern and Central California. And one of the other things I like Red Lynx did is they made it look more like it's outdoors for one, and I always like racing games or of this nature that are more brightly lit. You know, I always, the dark and grittiness of Trials HD never was super appealing to me. The second thing too is they made it look more like a mountain bike course, like a downhill mountain bike course, which in reality, for the physics and the kind of things they're going for, makes more sense. There's one race. I finished it in 13 minutes with 25 faults. No, that's just how long it is, John. It's like an enduro, but with really? Trials jumps. And that was, I finally gave up on the game. I'd have to go look at HD to figure out where I finished. But they were using so many gimmicks because they'd figured out that they probably had testers that just blew the doors off most of their courses. So they started adding gimmicks, you know, like explosions, and in the case of Evolution, water shooting you places, and other things. That it's like, I don't know. I'd rather see it be a little more pure. Just give me obstacles, you know. Yeah, some of their obstacles are a little placed a little closer together than they would be on a true trials course or in the outdoors. There is one where a hand crushes you. That one, man, I actually did that like three times. It made me laugh so hard. You ride down on like the middle finger, and if you're not fast enough or if you jump too high, the hand crushes you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's that one was gimmicky, but a gimmick I liked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's like, that's okay, that's not something you're going to see every day.
Sounds like you should get an animated foot that comes down with a
Now that would be Now see, Monty Python
style.
Oh, and the other thing too, without giving it away, it was one of the hardest fucking levels that I've played so far. They did an homage to Limbo.
Well, I heard about that.
And I hated the level. It was a pain in the fucking ass, and it's one of the few I cannot get to the top of the leaderboard amongst my friends. And in like the top 10 or 12,000 of all writers. But it looks just like Limbo. That's all I'm gonna say. You're gonna have to play it for yourself. I don't want to spoil it too much, but not that I'm really spoiling it. But it was actually really cool. And it only took me like 2 seconds, having played Limbo a lot. It only took me 2 seconds to realize, wait a minute, this is Limbo. They're doing, that's okay. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has more of the right than it. If you like the last one, John, you'll like this one. Yeah, if you want to wait till, because you got so many games, you got Mass Effect 3, if you want to wait till, you know, it goes on sale for like 800 points in 6 months or the holidays, yeah, I don't blame you, but you're not going to get, if you liked HD, you're not going to get burnt for 1200 either.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I mean, when I got the HD on sale, I mean, I was spouting comments about how it would have been worth the full price as well. So,
well, and part of the reason I'm crowing too, audience, is I had a Walmart gift card, so the points were free. So it's like, you know, paying 1,200 points for something I didn't pay Squadola for, you know. You know, you listen. As a matter of fact, before we move on to the discussion topic, listening to Gunsage talk about the midweek madness sales and this and that, I only turn on Steam if I intend to play a game. That's the other way I'm keeping the pile of shame from growing. I only turn on Steam if I intend to play a game. I'm not looking.
Yeah, that's smart.
Not looking. Okay, let's move on to our discussion topic. There's been a lot of talk about game pricing. And that makes sense when you give thought to how many different types and styles of, and platforms, I guess, of games there are. I bitched about it in episode 104 and 105, how the $60 market is broken. You know, $60 for the game and an ass ton of DLC because they just still haven't got enough of your money. And while it's broken, it's kind of hard to sit here and get anybody to believe it's broken because you still have plenty of lemmings who throw their money at it, and which they're perfectly welcome to do. But I still think that given where we're headed between digital distribution, handhelds, mobile gaming, free-to-play, Facebook, the bubble has to burst on $60 AAA titles sooner or later, or that genre, maybe 50 if it's PC. Gunsage, I know you wrote a little bit about this in your post on the true value of video games. How much longer do you think the hard-headed AAA developers can keep up hanging on to this $60 price schematic?
Well, I think what they're realizing more and more, because I started seeing it whenever I still had a 360. You know, they were doing the whole, oh wow, EA made an Xbox Live Arcade title, okay, or you know, Double Fine made this, or you know, different stuff like that. I'm like, okay, well, this is only like $15 or $10 or whatever. You know, why aren't they pricing that? I mean, if they really feel like their products are, oh my God, they're worth $60, what's, you know, preventing them from going ahead and charging it there? Oh, because it's only, you know, it only does this. And I think we're getting to the point where eventually they're not going to be able to justify $60 for a brand new game. I mean, I can't, as a gamer, you know, obviously justify shelling out $60 for a game I'm going to beat in a day. I know there's some people that can. There's some people that it's not about whether they can beat it in a day. It's about the experience, and they understand it's, you know, they pay for the experience, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of gamers are getting to the point where they can get the same experience or a better one by paying for an indie title, and they are seldom, actually, I don't know of any that are actually asking for $60 for their games. So, you know, as the indie community is going up, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, you know, the indie community now is significant. So I don't understand why it hasn't gone down already. I'd say very easily within the next year or two, they're not going to be able to justify $60. You know, already there's some companies that they'll release a game brand new for $40 or $50. And then if you're looking at Steam, typically it's about, you know, $40 or $30 depending. So, you know, honestly, whenever I see a new game on Steam and it's like $60, really? Pass. You know? So, but that's just me. Yeah, I honestly think it will be within the next couple of years that they'll realize, especially with digital distribution, there's no reason to have it priced that high anymore.
John, what are your thoughts on the $60 price scheme and how long it'll last, if you want to throw that in like Gunsage did?
Yeah, pricing is something that I'm constantly watching. I've made it no secret on this show that I buy my, you know, the vast majority of my games on sale, just trying to get value for my money. And it's not so much that, you know, how many hours a game has that, you know, is it worth, you know, the dollar per hour, you know, ratio or not, but it's more of, for me, the quantity of high quality games out there that I want to play is huge. And if all of the AAA games that came out in 2011, for example, so, you know, your Gears 3, your Uncharted's, and you're right back into Mass Effect now. This, you know, just came out recently as well. It's so much out there that if I want to get my hands on that stuff, I'm either going to have to wait for a sale, or I'm going to pirate it. And since I'm not a person who pirates my games, I'll wait for the sale or wait for the price drop. I can't afford, you know, me with my family and my home and my car and all that stuff. I can't pay $60 for, you know, 10, 12 games that came out at the end of the year, and I don't know if anybody could. It just seems like, I mean, you know, development costs notwithstanding, you know, I'm sure they're increasing because games are getting bigger and more higher production values and such, but there has to be a breaking point, and I think that, you know, I agree with Gunsage. The next couple of years, there's going to have to be some give in that price, because I don't know if it's going to fall through or not, because, like you say, some people are, you know, will buy it just because it's out, but you know the money is tight for people, and I just can't afford it.
I'm not sure when, so I'm not like these guys did. I'm not going to give you a win, but here's how I see it. AAA devs and publishers, and it's not just EA and Activision, okay? Let's get over that. I know EA won the consumer's worst company ever poll. Fuck, it was an internet poll. I mean, really? Really? Activision's no better. Take-Two is no better. Bethesda, in a lot of cases, is no better. Ubisoft is no better. What's left of THQ? You know, the list just goes on and on. If you've been in the AAA business or the higher-end game business for a long time, you're stuck in that old model. And they're going to ride it until it crashes and burns. If I was forced to give a timeline, I'd say it's going to be more like 5 or 6 years. Because it's like these big devs are in a box. And the box is slowly being crushed by indies, handhelds, mobile, free-to-play, you know, Facebook games, all that stuff. And while the survivors of the box analogy may learn, it's going to take some time. Because whether it's Call of Duty, whether it's Dragon Age, whether it's Mass Effect, maybe not after this current one, but, you know, whether it's Halo, Battlefield, people who can afford to are going to throw their money at it. Because that's what their buddies are doing, or thousands of various other reasons. The sad part is, with my background in education and business, sure, this $60 less quantity, and I know when COD is selling 15 or 16 million, that doesn't sound like less quantity, but it is in reality. is great, but my thinking is a tiered pricing system where you're going for volume to make your profit is far more viable, and it's entirely possible with video games. You know, my thinking is when the crash does come, and as long as mobile and handhelds stay strong, or iPad, let's just say, tablet, the crash is going to come. So I think you'll probably see it get knocked back to like $45 for a AAA title. And then, like Gunsage was talking about, then those developers doing more arcade or downloadable titles in between, but closer in quality to the what we consider AAA title today, the $60 one. Something else that kind of dovetails into this that I thought was interesting, it just popped up on my Google Plus feed the other day, a guy wondering out loud why all software doesn't do mobile-style demos or trials or ad-supported games. And now he was talking about all software, including Microsoft Office, Photoshop, stuff like that. But video games is more suited to what mobile games are doing. And if you're not aware of that, like after Angry Birds, the original, came out for X amount of time, you could pick it up on your iPhone or your Android for free. The whole game. It just had ads. Yeah, the ads were slightly annoying, but the game was freaking free. Kind of like shareware demos, but longer. And that's something else that I think is potentially possible in bigger titles like downloadable experiences or full-blown experiences. John, could you see something like that? And is it something you'd be interested in? Maybe an ad or two here or there, and you get a, but you get a game for free, like an arcade game or something, after, yeah, after a certain time, certain amount of time it's been out. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind advertising games as long as it's not, you know, entirely obtrusive into my experience and sucks me out of what I'm doing. I wouldn't want to play Mass Effect 3 for free and see a Toyota Camry ad on the side of in the marketplace of the Citadel. You know, it'd be kind of weird to see. But the I don't mind that stuff at all.
Gunsage, what do you think?
Well, especially games like first-person shooters, hell, pretty much any game, like, you know, Team Fortress 2 style, things of that nature, would be perfectly geared toward it. Where it's like, you know, between matches they'll have advertisements, or like maybe whenever you're waiting to respawn, it's like, wow, you really cut that close, almost as close as Gillette. Or, you know, just something silly, you know, something they could just throw out there, and it'd be something kind of fun, and it would be there, and there you go. And, you know, they could still use the free to play model so that you know, they would still make money off of it. As long as it's not something ridiculous like Shepard, where did you get that gun? Why, I got this gun from my old buddies at Smith & Wesson, or, you know, something like that. As long as it's not something intrusive like that, I think it'll be fine. I mean, there's a lot of games that are geared very easily toward that, you know, waiting between lives or between missions or levels or something, have an ad pop up, you know, kind of like what YouTube does now. I guess the only reason it annoys me on YouTube is half the time the video won't load, but the ad will. And yeah. Usually it's for a 30-second video, but it's a 1-minute advertisement. You know, that kind of deal.
You kind of just reminded me of when they used to have the 1 versus 100 game on on Xbox Live. I really enjoyed that. I enjoy playing that game, and then they have an ad every once in a while, and that was actually a pretty decent moment to get up and like go to the bathroom or grab a drink and come back and pick it up again. Like it you know, I didn't mind it at all, and it was free to play.
Well, and that's the thing, John. You're talking about, you know, Toyota Camry ad, you know, and like the Citadel Marketplace or the I almost said Citadel PX, like it's an army base. You could still do that You know, like have an old rusty Coke machine float by the Normandy. You know, don't have any character specifically look at it, or have maybe some, you know, kind of character on the side mumble 20th century space junk. But it's just visual marketing. You could do the same with shooters really easily. Maybe not Halo, but yeah, that's probably a little too intrusive, Gun Sage. Maybe not in Halo, but like in COD, you know, you could use like old beat up stuff that has the ad on there, and subliminally, you're going to know, you know, that that's marketing. I mean, you're always going to have a certain amount of people who just shit their fur over any kind of ads at all. But there's a cost. Some of these people that think the internet should be entirely free and everything they do on the internet should be entirely free make me laugh, because it's like, there's always a cost. Nothing is free. No matter what. So you could... But I'm glad to see you guys support that, because I never thought about that. Because I do, on my iPhone that I just use for gaming, I've got the Angry Birds Lite or Free Edition, and there's little ads that you notice, but they're out of the way. You know, they're out of the way of the gameplay. And I thought at first that might annoy me, but it really doesn't. I just ignore it. And like Gunsage said, when you hit pause to either restart the level or to go back to the main menu, it flashes up an ad. I mean, on the mobile market, it's for a lot of garbage. But it's still advertising, and there's still Rovio's able to pay for that. You know, pay for the copy of the game, or however you want to put it. So there you go. It's up to you, developers. I'm serious. I think it's going to be 5 to 6 years, because they just... It's human nature. I mean, it's just human nature. You can call it greed, you can call it whatever you want, but as long as people are throwing money at you, human nature is going to dictate that you're not going to stop until it starts hurting your bottom line. You know? All humans are like that, from the poorest man making it paycheck to paycheck to the richest sumbitch in the world. You climb in somebody's wallet and start hurting their wallet, they're going to take notice, and that's what's going to have to happen with these AAA developers. Let's move on to Audio Master G. He's back. He was live last week. He's Memorex this week. It's an interesting question. One I'm actually glad he's brought up, because I have some very specific things to say about it. Take it away, Audio Master G.
Audio Master G here, folks. What's up, WonderPod crew? This is a bit lengthy, so I'm just gonna hop into it. The following came up on Speak Up on Kotaku by a writer going by the handle ParadoxMe. And since it's a public forum, I figure this is open game for the WPO crew to tackle as well. I won't throw anyone under the bus, but there have been discussions on the show that come dangerously close to this particular commentary. And I quote, "Why should a video game franchise die just because you don't like it? What is it about folks that call for the death of franchises they dislike rather than simply ignoring them? Game Trailers did a video of the top 10 franchises that need to die, and all the usual suspects made the list. Call of Duty, Madden, Halo, Kingdom Hearts, Final Fantasy, etc. And it just boggles my mind. There are a lot of things that I don't like or feel have run their course, but how selfish of me would it be to wish them out of existence, preventing fans from enjoying them? All of the franchises listed are still selling hundreds of thousands to millions of copies of each new release, so surely people enjoy playing them. So, what are your thoughts, gentlemen? I realize that the way this is worded is slightly loaded. However, perhaps you indeed have solid reasoning and disagree. And of course, now it's your turn to do so. Audio Master G, out."
Hey G, thanks for the question. Just wanted to let you know that your musical abilities at the beginning of 106 did impress the elusive friend of mine, Roger. He liked all the funny musical interludes in between your introductions. So, you know, kudos from him as well. Anyway, back to your question. When I talk about, you are right. I do tend to jump on Call of Duty and the Maddens and the Halos sometimes, but it's not so much in a like they need to die that they're done. For me, it's more of I want to see. Like, there's so much money and resources put into these things. I'd like to see it put into new IPs, into new franchises, and there's something new rather than the regurgitation. And, you know, I mean, a franchise is a franchise. You know, it's all about, you know, milking that cash cow. But, you know, I just like to see new things. It's kind of a, I mean, I can't speak for the other guys. You know, I think there's more things that can be done with a Call of Duty, like a wartime setting, than just the same formula. Like that's the key phrase that keeps popping in my head. You know, formula, and no real evolution, no changes. And we've talked that topic a lot on the show, but I'll hand it over to Gunsage. What do you think, man?
Well, this kind of goes several directions for me. First off, I look at a game like, for example, Final Fantasy XIII, and I go, look, if you're going to go ahead and experiment with a bunch of different things that are going to mess up the original formula to the game, don't call it Final Fantasy. Call it whatever you want, but you don't need to call it Final Fantasy. I understand you're calling it Final Fantasy because, well, it'll rope in a bunch of people, and officially it's a Final Fantasy project, but you changed around so many elements, it's so alien to most Final Fantasy games. I mean, really, you threw in a couple of things like chocobos and things of that nature, but they weren't even necessary. I mean, they really weren't. So at the end of the day, it really feels less like a Final Fantasy game and more... Really? And more like a goddamn slap-together project. So, at the end of the day, you know, something like that, I'm like, it's not even really a formula that's been done to death. It's just a series that's been done to death, and there was no reason to even call it Final Fantasy. Versus something along the lines of, say, Mirror's Edge, which I would like to see more of. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, with something like that, it's like, well, hell, that's the only time that's ever been done, and it was short, but it was really fun. It was fun to play through a couple of times, and I understand why people didn't buy it brand new, but okay, now people know what it is. People recognize it. Make, like, a sequel that's only $30, or make it where it's all trial run-based, or make it where you create your own tracks or something. You know, that would have been really fun. And then there's other stuff where I really do support brand new ideas, but I think it's more, for me, it's more along the lines of, I don't think that there's certain franchises that need to die per se. They just need to realize that what they're doing is becoming too formulaic, like the Halo series or the Call of Duty series. The problem, though, is really they can't do anything new because of what's going on, what happened with Final Fantasy XIII, for example. It's like, okay, they could try something new and fall flat on their face like that. So I understand the necessity for doing the same thing over and over again, but there's still that need to spice it up at the very least.
Oh, the kill the franchise rant. Well, let's get one thing out of the way first. If I'm the non-named person that was supposed to be heading under the bus, I need to clear something up, and it's probably a good time to do it. This isn't G's fault, just in general. Because I've never said with any serious tone or with any weight behind it that a franchise should just explode and go away because I don't like it. There are plenty of franchises I don't like, or just don't enjoy anymore. COD is a prime example of that. That said, I have no issue with franchises that I don't like or am just not into existing. It's silly and stupid to think they should go away or cease to exist because I don't like them. So there you have it on that. As far as a general, I don't know. I mean, franchises are going to live out their lifespan. Most of the time, it's fanboys who have some other franchise they love, like, you know, Gears fans going bananas about, you know, about a Halo or COD and Battlefield, just going on and on and on, you know. But, I mean, you know, so the talk of franchises dying, it just, it's pretty ridiculous. I don't know. I mean, that guy's very short speak up post, he's right, but again, I think when you really pare away the layers, it's mostly fanboys bitching from one franchise to another. But at the same time, too, just because you're discussing or looking at the future potential of a franchise who has hit its peak, like a COD, like a Halo, like a Final Fantasy, it doesn't mean you're calling for its death. It just means you're discussing how much longer can it go on. I mean, look at COD. MW3 is over. And if the early rumors and leaks of what they're doing with Black Ops 2 is any indication, it should be called COD Black Ops Future Soldier. I mean, you know, so there's nothing new under the sun. Franchises will live and die in their own, you know, pace, in their own time frame. Some I will be with right till the very end. Some I've walked away from. So there you go, Audio Master G. I really, really, we really, really appreciate the question. Look forward to hearing from you again next week. Okay, let's move on to news. News this week is pretty short, which is a good thing. The discussion topic and the G segment were good, solid topics. The first one comes to us from VentureBeat.com. The headline is, Valve's new pricing will charge players based on how much of a jerk they are. The folks over at Valve have cooked up a novel pricing model for the upcoming Defense of the Ancients 2. If you don't know what DOTA 2 is, it was once a mod for Warcraft, the RTS, now it's its own thing. Yada, yada, yada. Look it up on Wikipedia. Managing Director Gabe Newell says that players will be charged based on what they bring to the community. Team players might get a free ride, whereas jerks are going to have to pay cold, hard cash. The issue that we're struggling with a bit is something I've kind of talked about before, which is how do you properly value people's contributions to a community? Newell told Develop Magazine. If you're the kind of player who helps newbies find their footing, releases cool mods, and reports bugs in a timely manner, you might find yourself playing for free. If you're a troll who picks on new players, exploits flaws, yada, 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 so on and so forth, I don't really see anything else. Gunsage, we'll start with you. I think Valve could get away with this, and I think they're probably going to, especially from some of the reports I've heard out of the DOTA 2 beta. Do you really think this is ever going to end up widespread as cool as it is, fucking charging trolls more?
Oh, fuck no. No. I mean, if we just want to go off of two unfortunate stories I have where perfectly innocent people got banned because trolls decided to go ahead and troll and troll and troll. Back at my last company, I had a guy who was playing Modern Warfare 2, and you know, I hadn't noticed him on for a couple of nights. I'm like, hey, man, where you been? You been on Xbox lately? He's like, no, I got my account banned. Well, what happened? Oh, I got banned by a bunch of stupid kids who were pissed off because I beat them at Call of Duty. And I laughed at them. And then the next thing I know, I'm banned because apparently they were part of some giant-ass clan of like 20-something people. So they all went ahead and wrote negative spamming reviews about me. And now I'm being investigated for it. So that's fun, and I'm thinking to myself, now granted, what he's probably meaning by, you know, valuable contributions and things of that nature is something that can actually be traced back to the person. You know, it's verifiable stuff they're either doing in the forum or, you know, within the game or something. But I think about the troll aspect of, look, you can troll up and troll down. You know, you could get all of your friends together to go ahead and promote you, even though you're a big fucking asshole. Or you can get all of your friends together to go ahead and take down someone who really only looked at you funny in a game for whatever reason. You know, and it, that's kind of the negative aspect of this. I mean, it's one thing if a mod is reporting you, you know, maybe they could make it harder to go ahead and play the game. Or when a mod, you know, reports you've done something right, maybe, you know, allow you to have something for free or whatever from the developer. But I just don't really... I understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to make people play nice. I just don't think it's going to work because it almost seems too close to vigilantism to, for it to really be effective.
Yes, but your buddy's case is isolated because that's happened to me twice, both in MW1 before I had the Wonder Pod crew or before I even met Pat, and in MW2. You just have to be able to contact the right people in, well, basically Steptoe's department in Microsoft Enforcement. I feel sorry for your buddy, and I've heard it happen to other people, but it's more a case of doing your homework online and finding out who, you know, who to contact. I had that happen twice with clans of 12-year-olds, and once I got to looking into it, I never got banned. I just got a message saying I was being investigated or an email, you know, and it's like, I did nothing really. I wasn't even ranting at them like I will Carlos. I was actually not, especially in the case of MW1, I knew nobody. So I didn't voice chat. Like one of the case of MW1, I didn't even have my headset plugged in, you know? So, but overall I do, your point is valid, Gunsage, reverse trolling and all that. It could be a concern. John, same question. Is this, you know, Newell has the resources and the wherewithal to get this to go, but is it going to take off?
I think there's potential there. I think it's a great thing to you know, a goal to make it, you know, the communities feel really vibrant and rich and encouraging you to contribute. I think something that Gunsage was starting to get into there was how far with vigilantism do you get to a point where you're too afraid to take any risks and it becomes too safe because everyone's reining it in too much, and then could you have a case where it becomes less fun because everyone's just being too nice or too I don't know. It's kind of like big, you know, Big Brother's always watching, you know, and dropping treats to the good dogs. is this going to be this dull? I would hope not, but you know, I guess that's maybe what he meant. I don't know, but I think the goal is a good one, if it can happen.
I think that already happens though. Just go trawl through re-edit sometime. You know, you always have brown nosers looking to get attention or to get somewhere or to become a mod or an op or go to work for Microsoft or whatever. You know, or Valve. Look at all these people I turned in doing bad things. I caught them masturbating while they were playing the game at the same time, you know, or something stupid like that. You know, but both of you guys' points are valid. I hope Newell goes through this, because a game like an RTS game, for those of you that have never been the victim of a Zergling rush, an RTS game can bring out very shitty community behavior. That is actually one thing I like about MMOs, because you get communities within the community. Two guilds I've been in. One was very cool from the start and stayed that way. It was all adult players, probably 28 or maybe even older, over 28 or 30. The second one had some younger people in it, some egos and some tempers, and it lasted about 6 months before, you know, trolling and things of that nature happened. So you're always going to deal with that. It's human personalities and human nature. But if Valve's at least looking at ways to combat it, I'm all for it. We'll see what happens with it. Our final story tonight, or the final bit we're going to talk about, Adam Sessler and G4TV parted ways. The first part of the story, this is from Games Industry International. I think they finally took all the games industries and slammed them head on at 100 miles an hour until they came up with this one. Anyway, basically the first chunk of the story talks about he's looking at working on a feature-length movie called Noobs and doing other things in the movie aspect. But then later on it's updated. Well, they've gotten no official answer as of yet. Kotaku cites sources. And when Kotaku starts citing sources, you better start pouring out salt like by the dump truckload. indicating that Cecil is leaving due to contractual dispute and the departure was not amicable. I went through Cecil's timeline because I follow him on Twitter just to see if there was like any hint at all. And Adam's not dumb. I couldn't find any hint at all that there was reason. But any way you want to look at it, I now have no reason to give G4 TV any of my time whatsoever. And I'm hoping that we see Sessler again on the internet, not just on the movie screen or working behind the scenes, because I've always really enjoyed his videos. He's one of the few guys who at times gets under my skin, really pisses me off, but I still have a huge amount of respect for because he generally tends to just give his gut honest opinion and leave it at that. So that even when I don't agree with him, even when he pisses me off, I always would come back and watch the next soapbox. Him and I usually ran about 50-50, me agreeing or disagreeing with him. So I'm sorry to see the soapbox come to an end, at least for now, but what the hell has G4 TV got left? Nothing. I think they better go get the Teletubbies out of retirement, find something to do. John, anything you'd like to say real quick?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big loss for G4. Sessler always, you know, seemed to me, as much as I didn't always agree with him either, he always seemed like somebody who did give a shit about games. And I don't know, you know, who's going to step up to the plate to replace him. It said on the article he was the editor-in-chief of their games content. So, you know, I think it's a pretty big shoes to fill in terms of some quality coverage of games being more than just, you know, fluff pieces and bones tossed out to you know, video game enthusiasts on their channel, who watch their channel. And yeah, you know, I hope he finds some success somewhere else and another outlet for his for his soapboxes. I've enjoyed those as well. So, you know, I haven't watched G4 in a long time, but he's he's one of the good guys. So.
Well said. That's what I meant too. He. You get the sense he truly gives a shit about video games. Mm-hmm. It's not just a job, or not just there to make money or page views or ratings and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that's agreed with him 100% of the time. And to be honest, to me, that's how you can. That's a good indication that they're just. This is my opinion. This is honest to God what I think. You know, and take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm. And, well, that's the difference. So, you know, so much of what their programming is stock. Here's a preview.
Yeah.
You know, here's a clip. You know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, like the fluff of the VGAs that you get, you know, on Spike and stuff. That's not how I would want their coverage to go. You know, all fluff pieces and just garbage.
Well, like we were talking about pre-show, I've got it on my satellite channels, and I watch it maybe one time for 10 minutes every 6 months until I get bored of it, and then I wander off and actually play video games. Gunsage, I know you were a fan of Cecil's Soapbox. You got anything to say there about this?
I wasn't really much of a fan.
Oh, do I have? I'm sorry. Do I have you confused with somebody? I thought Probably. You were.
No, I've seen some of his stuff, but mostly what I've seen is the X-Play stuff. I agree in that he's got some decent opinions on him, but I don't know. I never really saw a lot of his content out of X-Play, so now I'm kind of interested in checking it out just in case. But Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, really, there is no reason to check out G4. Well, there hasn't been for a while, but there really definitely is, you know, no reason to check out G4 now. I mean, what am I going to go ahead and check out? What, Morgan Manjaw? I mean, you know, pretty much everyone else there just annoys the shit out of me. So, it just, yeah.
I don't care if you use it, but that Morgan Manjaw joke is gotten so beyond fucking lame. Normally I wouldn't say a word, but it's like, really? To be actually, since you bring up Morgan Webb, she actually reminds me of Cecil in a lot of cases when she's done the few videos I've seen with her by herself, that she really likes video games. I mean, the childish man baby fucking, oh, look, she got a fucking man jaw. You know, oh, so fucking what? I've got a pinky toe that looks like Princess Diana. You gonna call me a fucking girl? Bite me. I mean, you know, it was funny, and I'm not picking on you, Gunsage. It was funny like the first five times I heard it, but it's been going on for years now.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Can we make up new material? If you want to make fun of her, fine, but can we make up new material? I mean, even Sessler ripped on her better than that a few times on the X-Play. I'm sorry, Gunsage. Is it Yahtzee that you watch all the time? Or that you used to watch all the time, that you shot me some links. I thought it was Sessler. I got you confused with somebody else. I apologize for that.
No, I mean, I watch Yahtzee, but
maybe it's Angry Video Game Nerd I was thinking of.
I watch him too, but his he's doing a movie now, so he really isn't doing any more videos, which is depressing.
He might be part of this noobs thing. I've heard a couple rumors about this.
Don't know.
Well, it says here, and I kind of glossed over it just so we could talk about him. His current projects include starring as himself in the summer 2012 movie Noobs and consulting with film production company on theatrical feature adaptations of video games. Well, the first thing he needs to do as a consultant is shoot Uwe Boll.
Yep.
And then take Michael Bay out behind the barn and give him a good beating.
Yep.
Not to change anything he's doing, because I'm tired of comic book nerds shitting their fur when the man says something after five martinis at a convention, but just to not say it. I mean, because, okay, I'm going to do this rant. I'm going to get in trouble for it. Because let's be honest. The first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie was shit when it was released in the 80s, and it hasn't fucking held up well now. Was I entertained by it? Yes. But don't tell me it's some kind of goddamn classic either. Boy, that was a mistake, and I'm not cutting it out either. I hear one more Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan just blowing their tinfoil right off their helmet. I'm fucking going to explode. I dare any of you with the nostalgia goggles to go watch that movie again. It entertained me when I was 12 or 13. It hasn't aged well. Trust me. Okay. I don't know how that went. I'm sorry, but that I saw one more rant about the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie off of like 10 sentences Bay said, and the whole fucking internet's got the pitchforks and torches out. Just my pop-off valve for how much more of it I could take, and then somehow the movie Noobs just got me going on it. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. My co-hosts are getting a chuckle out of it. I just hope we see Sessler on the internet again. Soapbox, I don't know. What are you other blogs? Talk you've been doing the soapbox. Pay the man. Although, as a film consultant, he's probably going to make a lot more money. So there you have it. My ranting explosion about turtles, ninja, and otherwise. I think that's a good I think that's a good wrap for the show. If you want to get in touch with us, just scream at me for daring to mess with your holy turtles, or any other reason you'd like to contact us, you can do so. The first way, or the best way, is on our Facebook, which is wonderpodonline.com. Now, that would be the website. God damn, I'm all over the place now. It'd be Wonderpod Online would be the Facebook. If you'd like to read the post Gunsage wrote about video game prices, or the post I wrote about the Dragon Dogma demo, plus a bunch of other posts we have on the site, you can go to wonderpodonline.com. There, finally got that right. We have YouTube videos. Haven't done one in a while. Probably should get off my ass and do some. But the YouTube channel is also WonderPod Online, or you can track down 36Wii. There's a bunch of our videos on that channel as well. We are on iTunes. Give us a rating. God help us, after almost 2 years, or after over 2 years, we're still not in the regular results. Yeah, Apple doesn't need an overhaul or anything. No, iTunes is perfect. If you don't like iTunes, which, believe it or not, I do even after that, we're also on archive.org. I post a player on the website so that there's many ways you can listen to this podcast. And if none of that works, you can contact us at wonderpodonline@gmail.com. wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at wonderpodonline. Or you can follow me on Twitter, if you dare, at O-R-I-G-I-M. Or you can follow John on Twitter.
At John Kehoe, J-O-N-K-E-H-O-E.
You can follow him and tell him you think I'm an asshole and should be fired for my ranting about probably a half dozen things on the show. My suspicion is, though, he's probably going to ignore you if he's got any brains at all. this has been episode 107 of Wonder Pod. Until next time, people, I think I'm going to eat turtle for dinner. That sounds like a good idea. See ya.
Tonight we dine on turtle soup.
Turtle soup.